is the Grinion Report. The unusual, weird news, anomalies, exopolitics. It's beyond the fringe, where conspiracy theory can become conspiracy fact. This is the Grinion Report with your host, Mike Evans.
From hundreds of miles beneath terra firma in the depths of the hollow earth, live from the Grailian bunker. Oh, you know what it is by now. It's your weekly one-stop shop for all the strange, the unusual. We're going to make sense of the madness, my friends. And I, of course, am Micah Hanks, the mouth of the South. This is the Grailian Report, the one and the only. And so glad to have you here joining us, as always. And speaking of joining us, as always, in studio, producer and co-host extraordinaire, the man himself who has shaved half of his beard. I didn't even know that zombies could grow beards. Mr. Chris Hayes. Chris, how are you this week?
Well, I'm doing really well now that I don't have a sweater on my face. And let me tell you, it feels good to be back. It feels like it's been literally a week since I've done this show with you guys.
The dog days are not quite over, are they? It is indeed the summer months. And I'll tell you what, here it is in the summer. This is when things start getting busy. Let's go ahead and put this out. During hour two, as we talked about last week on the program, we have an exclusive interview with Eric Von Daniken, author of Chariots of the Gods, and of course, more recent endeavors like Twilight of the Gods. Well, we're going to be talking with Eric, who joins us live from Switzerland. That's right, during the second hour of this week's edition of the program. And since our producer has been working so hard to line up interviews like that, I have to say, actually, no, that was Scotty, our good friend Scotty Roberts over at Intrepid Magazine.
Who's Scotty?
Well, he's not Harbo.
Oh.
Yeah, he's not Harbo. Scotty Roberts, indeed, of Intrepid Magazine, will be joining us for that interview with Eric Von Daniken. And then we're also going to feature that as an audio vignette on the Intrepid Magazine podcast just as well. So that's going to be fantastic that we get to bring this audio to people. And I tell you what, it's going to be so neat to be able to talk with Eric Von Daniken. I really can't wait for that. And speaking of talking with people, you know, of course, we always like to talk with you, the listeners. If you'd like to reach us here at this program, it's very easy to do, and there are a number of ways you can do it. But the easiest is just to try info@grailianreport.com. That's G-R-A-L-I-E-N report.com. info@grailianreport.com. That's the email. But you can also send us a text message at any time. Seriously, everybody texts these days, and if you'd like to send a text message to Micah and Chris and the gang here at the Grailian Report, it's easy to do, 828-367-7201. That's how you reach us via text message here on the program. Going to the listener emails for people who have reached out recently, Allison Jornlin writes, "Hi, Micah, I listen to the show every week, and I thought you might want to know about the death of the father of the Haunted History Tour." Well, of course we want to hear about that, because it just so happens here in Asheville, North Carolina, that, well, Christopher Hayes here might be what we would call, I don't know about the father of the Haunted History Tour, but he's certainly one of the more active Haunted Tour history guides here in Asheville. Isn't that right, Chris?
That is, in fact, correct. I recently have had an opportunity fall into my paranormal little lap. I'm now currently the managing partner of Better Tours of Asheville, and if you're in the Asheville area and want to check out a haunted walking tour or a haunted pub crawl, go on over to www.bettertoursofasheville.com, and, well, I'll hook you up.
As a matter of fact, if you take that tour, here's what I'd like to say. Chris, could I call that the official tour of the Grailian Report? Can we call that?
Well, I mean, that's what I've been calling it for a month and a half,
well,
so I hope you're calling it that.
Well, you know what I'd like to say is that if you're in the Asheville area and you take the Better Tours of Asheville haunted tour that Mr. Chris Hayes here often is actually leading himself, please do tell whether you heard this on the Grailian Report and whether you heard about it on the Grailian Report. And so, of course, naturally, we're very interested in hearing about haunted tours and the like. And yes, as Allison writes, we've lost a man who was really kind of behind, at very least in the Chicago area. He was known as the father of the Haunted History Tour. "My brother and I," Allison writes, "we used to gather around the radio breathlessly as children, listening to ghostly tales spun by Richard Crow, Chicago's ghost hunter. He was an innovator, offering haunted bus tours and trips through Chicago, beginning way back in 1973. He ran one of the very first, if not the first, trips through Chicago that was a ghost tour. Well, he died Wednesday at the age of 64. He'll be buried in Resurrection Cemetery, the famed haunt of Resurrection Mary, the hitchhiking ghost that he made famous. You know, I visited Resurrection Cemetery with my good friend and one of our field correspondents of the program, Mr. Tom Cameron, who was kind enough, get this, Speaking of official jurisdictions of the Graylian Report, our official magazine of this program is Intrepid Magazine, of which my good friend Scotty Roberts is the publisher. Well, let me tell you this. My friend Tom Cameron, a field correspondent on this program, and of course a native of Chicago, was kind enough to provide a nice, a very nice piece, a eulogy of sorts, that was written for Mr. Crow, commemorating him and the work that he did there in Chicago. That'll be in this month's edition of Intrepid Magazine. Allison continues that the blog post referenced here, and she sent a link, links to his last radio appearance back in October of 2011. And then there's some details about the wake. Now, if you're in the Chicago area, and I know that we do have some listeners in the Chicago area, the wake apparently, oh, you know what? It was Monday, June 11th, so we're already too late. But I hope that maybe a few of you out there in Chicago were able to make it out to that. It was held at the Modell Funeral Home. And that said, you know, there have been, unfortunately, a lot of rather peculiar stories about death in the news lately. And when we pair that with some of these stories about zombies and things, I'm not entirely sure what I want to make of these. Now, I'll tell you, I was interviewed by my good buddy Jeffrey Pritchett for his Examiner webpage the other day, and he asked me, are we in the middle of a zombie crisis? And I said, no, I don't think there's a zombie crisis. And then, of course, I noted the very choice and in fact, the rather insightful wording of my good friend and mentor, Mr. Brad Steiger, in calling it a Wendigo psychosis. We talked about that on the program last week, I believe, when we had Christopher O'Brien of the Paracaster on the show. And Brad emailed me, and he said, thanks for the plug. And because I did say, indeed, that I think that to call what we're seeing out there, I don't think that, again, that Brad is necessarily asserting that there are literally spirits of Wendigos and things like that leaping into people's bodies, because we know that a lot of these incidents can be linked directly with bath salts and the like. But what I do see with Brad is that he is wise enough to see this folkloric parallel to this behavior going on in society today and to draw that parallel. And hence he didn't say that people are being possessed by Wendigos, but he carefully worded it and said that people are suffering from what he called a Wendigo psychosis. And indeed, to me, that does illustrate the levels of depth behind Brad's thinking. I don't know why it is that we are seeing so many incidents lately where this sort of thing is happening. And yes, it is a bit disturbing. And Chris, I tell you, Gawker.com carried this story the other day that literally made my skin crawl. Okay, the headline reads, "Dead toddler reanimates at his own wake to ask for some water, and then he re-dies." He re-dies. Now, being a zombie, I'm sure you know a little something about coming back from the dead.
I know much less about re-dying. That the prospect of dying again, just, it terrifies me.
It is
to my rotted core.
Right down to your rotted core. Well, Brazilian media has been reporting about this bizarre story. It took place in the northern city of Belém, where a toddler pronounced dead already had suddenly come apparently back to life. Reanimated is the term that they used, very Lovecraftian. He came back to life, reanimated shortly before his own funeral, and asked his father for a drink of water. 2-year-old Kelvin Santos was declared officially dead after succumbing to pneumonia at Alberlardo Santos Hospital. The family held an open casket wake later that same day, inviting relatives to pay their respects. And then, just 1 hour before the funeral, the boy unexpectedly sat up in his... Well, I don't know if he was in the coffin. There's a photograph of a coffin here, but he definitely sat up, and he turned to his father and asked if he could have some water. Now, the boy had already been pronounced dead. Everyone, according to Antonio Santos, the father, everyone in the room started to scream. He said, we couldn't believe our eyes. And then we thought a miracle had taken place and that our boy had come back to life. But get this, and this is absolutely tragic. The little boy, unlike similar stories we hear about where someone is wrongly presumed dead and then because of some sort of a strange condition they come back to life. Well, this little boy, he sat up, he asked for water, and then returned into this comatose sort of state. And then Kelvin just laid back down, Mr. Santos said. He lay back down the way he was, and we couldn't wake him. He was dead again.
Well, I wonder, not, you know, to detract from any hope given by this story, what little hope you could get. I just wonder, you know, Brazil, maybe outside Rio de Janeiro, could be considered a third world country. I wonder how good the embalming practices are. I've heard multiple reports throughout history, and even an eyewitness account of people who are dead will sit up, and it's all just nerves and rigor mortis hitting really, really hard and contracting the muscles in the abdomen.
But do they speak, Chris?
Making them sit up. I'm getting to the speaking, and that's what brought up the embalming practices. Maybe if the embalming practices aren't so good, it could just be gases escaping the body through the mouth, making it sound, you know, making it sound like the kid's asking for water.
Chris, the kid sat up, looked at his dad, according
to the
story.
Unless there's like a recording of the kid saying, "Hello, father, may I have a glass of water?" It's pretty, you know, it's not beyond the realm of disbelief for gas to sound like water.
It's possible, perhaps. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe we need more details here. But according to the story, again, they said that he unexpectedly sat up and that he asked if he could have some water. Now, again, we do hear stories like this from time to time. That makes this one no easier to deal with. Very strange indeed. Now, little Kelvin's family took his body back to the hospital, okay, after the alleged reanimation incident, in search of answers. But doctors had none. They said all they could do was scratch their heads and declare him dead once again.
Also, just, you know, and this just came to me, I don't know why it wasn't my first thought, if you're having a funeral, you've been embalmed, and if there's any chance that you could not be dead initially, once all your blood is sucked out and filled with formaldehyde and all the other chemicals, you're dead. You're dead.
Well, I don't think that Kelvin was embalmed here, because in this story it says the funeral was delayed in hopes that Kelvin would return to life as before, but again, this time he was truly gone. So apparently there was still some hope that the boy would come back to life again, that maybe that there was something. What is it? There are different kinds of snakes. Is it the Black Mamba? Is that the name of the snake that has a potent venom that can cause you to go into a state where you literally, your heartbeat slows to a point that it's literally, especially in more primitive circumstances, when in the lack of modern medical apparatus that can conclusively determine if an individual is indeed deceased.
I'm sorry, I was checking to see if your hair poofed up a little bit when you said that.
Yeah, right. Oh, my
no,
God.
It hasn't. He doesn't have enough hair for it to poof up.
I've got to say, I'm going to be at the Paranormal UFO Conference in Sacramento this weekend that Anthony Sanchez is putting on. Now, Ed Grimsley's going to be there. I don't know if you know this. I've got a little bit of a history with Ed Grimsley, okay? I'll tell you this. I'm just, okay, full disclosure here. Ed Grimsley mortally offended me one time. Well, we were together in Joshua Warren's basement. We brought Grimsley into town for a UFO Skywatch years and years ago. And Ed Grimsley, I'm sorry, I got to just tell the whole story. We were doing experiments in Joshua's laboratory with a Wimshurst electrostatic generator. Okay, no, it was a Van de Graaff, actually, because it had the little metallic sphere and everything. And my girlfriend at the time laid her hands on this machine, and Grimsley looks over at Joshua and goes, "Josh, does that machine make her breasts any bigger?" And I said, "Mr. Grimsley, that is really unacceptable right now, and my girlfriend and I are going to leave." And he said, "Oh, well, hold on, I just want to tell you a joke." Now, I'm not going to repeat here the joke that he told, but he added insult to injury. He poured salt on the wound. Okay, at that point.
Dear listeners, I'm sorry. I should have known in advance. From now on, anytime Micah says full disclosure, I want you to shield your children's ears.
Well, I'm sorry. I mean, I didn't agree with that. And I'm not making Ed out to be a bad guy. He was just kidding around, but I think that there are times where there are acceptable ways to kid around and unacceptable ways to kid around. And I remember Josh actually called me the other day and he said, "You know, I think you just took that the wrong way." But I said, "You know, I'm sorry. I'm the kind of guy who stands for the integrity of others around me." And I just didn't think that was acceptable, nor was there integrity behind that statement, that kind of joke.
Well, given the passage of time, I just need to ask, now that you're not so sore over it all,
No, it didn't. Shut up. God. Anyway, you know, now here's the thing. Grimsley, and actually, I spent the next 2 days with Ed Grimsley, and no problem. I actually did an interview with Ed Grimsley about oh God, 3 or 4 weeks ago. Now, during that interview, I also have to say this. Ed was telling a bunch of his stories about flying saucers and things and seeing space wars and stuff when he was a kid, because Ed's story is that he would lay awake at night when he was a child and he would watch these dogfights, he said, between flying saucers going on up in the sky. And he said that there were intergalactic wars that were going on over Earth that you could watch every single night. And when this was a panel discussion, and when it came back around to me, I had to say, and I'm sorry, despite what Mr. Grimsley says, I don't think there's any evidence right now that there are intergalactic dogfights between warring extraterrestrial factions taking place over Earth today.
Well, maybe you should be the skeptical.
Maybe so. I don't know. But, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing Ed out in California. I hope that Ed remembers me, and I hope that he and I have a chance to sit down and talk, and I'll still dispute his sentiments that there are dogfights going on over Earth between warring extraterrestrial factions. I'll look forward to hearing his presentation, as always, and I will afford him the courtesy and the respect that any speaker should be able to get. If someone thinks enough of them to bring them on to a panel like this and to allow them time to speak and to talk, you know, I will afford them the respect that they deserve. But nonetheless, that doesn't mean I have to agree with them. When we come back here on the Graylian Report, we're going to be digging into a little bit more of the strange and unusual news that's going on out there. And let me tell you, on a program like this, it's hard not to find strange and unusual news. For instance, did you hear this one right here about death rays being blamed for cows' deaths? Are there aliens behind this? I think, maybe, therefore, aliens. We'll dig into it after this here on the Graylian Report. I'm Micah Hanks. Are you an author or maybe someone who wants to write books for a living? You know, self-publishing is one of the most exciting areas in the publishing world today. The reach of the internet has made the world, well, a little smaller, and just about anyone can pursue their dreams of writing and selling their work to a readership worldwide. But when you finish writing your book, part of what sells your words is having a great-looking cover. And that's why I highly recommend Green Alien Art, featuring the work of Rick Green, one of the finest graphic artists out there, who specializes in book covers, trailers, and graphic art that will help bring your written work to life. If you're considering self-publishing, make sure your work looks the best that it can. Green Alien Art will help you do it. Online at greenalienart.com.
Hi, Bob Tarmac from InceptionRadioNetwork.com. I'm going to clue you into a show that I listen to every single week. It's Inception Radio with Jamie Hanigan. It airs Friday nights, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. Jamie always brings on new guests every single week on a variety of topics. UFOs, it's paranormal, it's time travel, conspiracy theory, it's everything. And Jamie covers it in depth. When does it begin? It's Friday nights, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. I'll see you there.
Welcome back to the program. It is the Graylian Report. I'm your host, Micah Hanks, joined in studio by Chris Hayes. Chris, hold on. Are we missing something? I always get that weird feeling sometimes. Now, hold on. No. Don't tell me. Let's see. No, I lost it. But anyway, welcome back to the program. We were talking back during the last segment about a death ray, an alien death ray blamed for the deaths of cows in Canada. We're going to get to that here in just a moment, but first I do want to say, if you're just tuning in and listening, you don't want to miss this week's edition of the program, especially during Hour 2, because we are going to be joined by none other than Eric Von Daniken, author of Chariots of the Gods, for a very special commercial-free second hour of the Graylian Report. Now, our good friend Scotty Roberts over at Intrepid Magazine helped us line this interview up, and I tell you don't want to miss it. Eric Von Daniken, love him or hate him, he's always been controversial, but he is definitely a giant in this field. And Mr. Von Daniken will be joining us here in the United States for the first time. Gosh, you know, I thought it was 7 or 8 years, but Von Daniken's people told us that it literally may have been longer than that since he was actually last here in the States. And he's going to be joining you and I, my friends, at the Paradigm Symposium this October 18th through 21st in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Don't miss out. Tickets are selling so fast. You know, I've got a good friend in Mexico City who emailed me today and said, I've got to go ahead and get my ticket because I'm just scared that they're going to sell out. I want to tell you the same. Don't let your tickets sell out. If you're waiting, go ahead and buy those tickets right now. You don't want to miss this event. Eric Von Daniken, George Norrie, William J. Burns of History Channel's UFO Hunters, Ancient Aliens. He's also the publisher of UFO Magazine. We've got Giorgio Tsoukalos, the guy with the hair, yes. Philip Coppens, Nick Redfern, Marie D. Jones, Laird Scranton.
Wait, I thought I was the guy with the hair.
You've got some fantastic hair. And folks, all of you listeners of the Grayling Report who have come to know and love the friendly and colorful cast of this program, yes, you'll get to meet Chris Hayes at the Paradigm Symposium. Who else will they meet that's associated with this program? I mean, I'll be there, obviously. I'm going to be, you know, Scotty and I are emceeing. And I'm actually, no, Chris, I'm giving maybe, because technically at the UFO Paranormal Summit in Sacramento, this weekend, you know, I'm talking about magic, mysticism, and the molecule. But let's see here. I'm actually doing an e-conference with Greg Bishop and Walter Bosley at the end of June that will be about the UFO singularity. But that's an e-conference. We'll talk about that more later. Now, if you want to see me give, at least to my knowledge, what will be the first public presentation on the UFO singularity, which will be my big book that's coming out later this year. It's going to be out just in time for Christmas. It'll be a great stocking stuffer. You know, that's going to be at Paradigm Symposium too. We're going to be doing a live broadcast of this program. We're going to have a dinner panel discussion that Ian Punnett of Coast to Coast Dam will be moderating, and George Norrie will be sitting in on that along with Von Daniken and yours truly, Scotty and I. You know, Chris will be there. We're all going to be part of that. You don't want to miss it. You really don't.
I think, you know, in reference to your question about who else will be there, won't Holly be there?
Holly?
Will Holly be available for this? I mean, I'll have to check her schedule I make it.
Yeah, I know Holly was taking some time off, you know, and there may be some other surprises, you know. I heard that there might be a couple of paradames there.
Ooh.
Yes, indeed. Yes, I think.
And what again are paradames?
Let me just say this. Maybe my better half will join me in Minneapolis, Minnesota this year.
It's kind of a heady promise. Are you willing to follow through with that?
Oh, she's a lovely flower, more beautiful than the lightest orchid. She is. Oh, she's bequeathed with all the finer elements of womanhood. The eyes. Shut up for a minute, Chris. The eyes, the nose, the mouth, the hair. But I digress. Yes, indeed. We were going to talk about death raising cows here for a moment. And hopefully, Chris, you'll be able to supply us with some poor guys sitting over there crying. Are you jealous? Is that what it is?
No, I keep forgetting all these disclaimers. There's one disclaimer for when Micah says full disclosure.
Yeah.
And the other disclaimer is for anyone who's not a child to cover their ears, because Micah's going to spew some
romanticisms,
some sickeningly sweet metaphors that just, I mean, I think I got 3 cavities from that.
The supreme archetype. Oh, she loveliest light and day. Chris is gagging over here anyway. Oh, well, anyway. And then there's another disclaimer you got to give out. You know what that one is? It's the alert before Micah starts talking about cosmic love.
Oh, no. Yeah, talk about that all you want. If anyone doesn't like it, then I'm sorry.
You're a good man. I tell you, I'm actually a little upset because I found out that cosmiclove.com is already taken. I know. What?
You know what? Internet website URL is not taken.
Oh, what's that? Oh, do I want to know?
It's from one of our old joke ads.
No, I don't want to know. Don't say it. I don't want to know.
But I think what we're going to do is buy that URL and heavily advertise it on Google, and it reroutes to the Grayling Report.
Oh, God. You know, that would actually send tremendous amounts of traffic our way.
Then we could offer help to the addicts out there. There are people who are addicted to things, and they need help from those addictions, and only the Grayling Report can provide that kind of help.
Are you addicted to bamboo oil? You're not the only one. there is help for people like you. Visit www.band... Anyway, I wish we actually had the kind of time that we used to have to make up silly fake commercials. You know, people would probably say this story we're about to get to is silly and fake, too. A Canadian farmer has lost at least 250 cows in the past 10 years. Now, while the government has charged him, and says that he failed to feed his cattle, the farmer claims that there is a different defense to be made. An alien defense. Werner Bock has posted plenty of YouTube videos in recent years detailing his cattle's malnourished appearance, sunken features, and continuous hair loss. He declares that his cows were victims of death rays, some form of alien weapon that had been covered up by the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. At least 250 head of cattle have died from what we call a death beam, Bach said on camera in May of last year, where the atmospheric air is manipulated into a death beam focused on the noses of the animals. Now, the animals breath in the death beam, the animals breathe in the death beam and then they slowly die, according to the Eastern New Brunswick farmer. But Canadian authorities are crying foul. Bach was slapped with charges Monday for not giving his cows adequate medical attention, according to CBC News. In a pretrial meeting on Monday, Bach wanted to subpoena three veterinarians and three officers to testify in his favor. But the judge noted that those individuals, if they were relevant to the case, would be there to testify against him. Bach wanted to call a vet who apparently found no evidence of burns on his cows. He also wanted to call an officer who says that they reassured him that there were no aliens flying in the airspace above his farm. No extraterrestrial wars going on in Earth airspace, at very least. But nonetheless, are there strange circumstances occasionally that can afflict cattle and maybe other different kinds of species, especially those of the livestock variety? You know, Charles Fort, decades and decades and decades ago, wrote about sheep that were mysteriously found dead, and I believe as our engineer... Oh, Matt Oakley! Our engineer, Matt Oakley. Where's Matt this week?
I don't know.
Funny. I'm glad that you know how to run...
He was here just a minute ago.
I'm glad that you know how to... Maybe he was abducted. Ooh.
I hope he's not somewhere breathing in a death ray.
I hope so, too.
Because apparently that's a really long and painful death, kind of like starvation.
Mm. That's not good. What happened to these cattle, you know?
Yeah.
Matt pointed out a while back that the proper term for blood loss, to the point of death is exsanguination.
I love that word.
Exsanguinated.
Exsanguination.
Well, Charles Fort talked about exsanguinated cattle, or no, not cattle, but sheep that were found in Ireland. I think this may have been the late 1800s when this event actually occurred. And then, of course, in the 1970s, there were all these stories of these cattle mutilations where the eyes, the genitals, soft organs and things like that, you know, parts of the jaw, you know, would be removed from these cattle. And as we've noted, if you visit the FBI.gov, there is a portal where a lot of, you know, official documentation about cattle mutilation have been released over the years. But, you know, the funny thing about the FBI reports are this, that since a lot of these cattle mutilations took place on Indian reservations, the FBI didn't have official jurisdiction over these, as I understand. They couldn't just go in there and investigate these things. And so there were extenuating circumstances that prevented these investigations from being seen through entirely in terms of trying to determine exactly what was going on. Now, there was a cattle mutilation a few years ago here in Western North Carolina that I investigated, and after a team of biologists actually observed the corpses, I was told, again, by accredited naturalist and biologist, whose name I will not mention here because she requested anonymity, but she told me that this I think that there had been ears, portions of the nose removed, which is interesting because this article here mentioned that Bach had talked about how these animals breathe in the death beam and slowly die, and I think that he'd actually mentioned at some point that this death beam seemed to be focused on the noses of the animals. Well, there was a connection with the nose with this cattle mutilation that occurred here in Asheville. It was outside of Asheville. It was actually in a neighboring county, but it was still in this Western North Carolina region. There was definitely a connection with damage sustained to the nose and portions of the ears, and also small, you know, soft organs had been removed, eyes, genitals, things like that. And what this naturalist told me, this biologist said, you know, I don't want to speak out of you know, my scientific training here out of the jurisdictions of my scientific background and training, but I do want to say that I am familiar with these reports of cattle mutilations and that there was not a known predator that could have actually caused the sort of damage that these animals sustained. And whatever killed them, it was not something natural by any means. And it was really disturbing to me because there had been footage taken by the local news affiliate. I contacted them. I actually had a friend who worked there, and he said, oh, yeah, all those tapes have been wiped. Excuse me, why? The tapes have been wiped clean. Why? Well, that's just standard procedure. I'm sorry. You had a bunch of animals that were killed in what, for lack of a better term, was described as a mechanical fashion, and you didn't save the tapes? Nor did they air footage of the actual deceased animals on the news. That footage never aired. They showed, you know, footage of the landscape. They showed, you know, footage that might have shown, like, the foot of one of the animals because, well, it was too disturbing to actually show these animals. Now, I understand that, but you don't show the actual images, and you also wipe the tapes clean. And then when the naturalists come up there and say that this was something that killed these animals in a very unnatural, maybe a mechanical fashion, get this. The county sheriff's department goes up there, okay, to investigate, and the official explanation that was issued pertaining to the deaths of these animals was that there was a pack of wild feral dogs
with surgical implements.
Yes, armed with laser beams and surgical implements, and that the dogs had been attacking the bovine victims by latching onto their noses and holding onto the nose until the animal passed out and then died. Now, we all know that that's exactly how feral dogs attack and kill cattle. Very strange circumstance. So I contacted the sheriff's department, and I asked for information. I'd like to speak to someone who has actually witnessed this. And, of course, my requests weren't returned. Seems to be a trend, doesn't it? But, oh well. And now, I'm not trying to assert that there was something ufological going on here. I'm not saying that aliens with death rays were coming down and blasting these cattle. I seem to think, however, to the contrary, that it's highly unlikely, if not even less plausible, that there were even a dog maybe as large as a Rottweiler latching onto the nose of a cattle and suffocating these cows in order to kill them. That just doesn't seem likely. And I've spoken to other people over the years, you know, who are experts. And I spoke, in fact, actually, this is interesting. I spoke to a rancher from Colorado who came to me to discuss his own experiences with cattle mutilation in the 1970s. Very, very vivid circumstances involving the landing of a craft and the exsanguination and exsanguination. Welcome to the exsanguination. Oh God. But anyway, no, this fellow, I'll call him Ron. He told me that he arrived with a couple of, deputy sheriffs at the scene of this cattle mutilation, and they found the animal, the remains left. And he said that in addition to the animal actually lying there, exsanguinated and with soft organs missing, he said that there were no flies or any animals that were insects that were buzzing around the corpse. It was completely left there in the tall grass. But he said that there were 3 football-sized, oval-shaped protrusions, you know, into the grass that seemed to indicate that some sort of an object, as he put it, touched down, and that this cow was lying in the center of the 3 of these. And I asked him, I said, well, you have experience as a rancher. You see what kinds of things happen. Could a cow like that have been killed by, I don't know, a feral dog latching onto the nose of the animal? And he laughed. He laughed at me, and he said, who the hell ever told you that? And it's the truth. It's very difficult to assume that a cow, an animal so large as a cow, could be killed, let alone, you know, so there aren't always just these, you know, the milk cows that are found. Occasionally there are prize bulls that are also found. Now, you tell me that even an animal as large as a Rottweiler is latching onto the nose of that animal and hanging on, being flipped around. And this is what Ron, okay, told me. He said that a cow or a steer that large would whip its neck back and forth and have that dog off of it so quickly, even if the nose went with it, that dog wouldn't be on that cow any longer. And yet this is the official explanation that the sheriff's department released. Interesting. Interesting stuff.
Maybe you should go ahead and mind your own business, Micah. You need to go ahead and stop asking questions.
One of these days, I'm going to learn.
And mind your business. Although, in Canada, were the cows in Canada exsanguinated?
You know, it doesn't say here, but it does say. What it does say is that they appeared malnourished, that they had appeared to die slowly, The farmer, Mr. Bach, had claimed that this beam was focused on the noses of the animal, but he doesn't give any other information about why he seemed to believe this. And, of course, there was hair loss, sunken features, all these sorts of things that were... So it's actually, what it sounds reminiscent of is, you know, in addition to malnourishment, maybe some sort of a skin disorder or something along the lines. It almost sounds kind of like mange, you know, with the loss of hair and things like
that. Well, I was going to say, it's pretty textbook. It wasn't aliens. There was no death ray. I'm sorry. But it's pretty textbook. There's a creature, a cryptid, up in Canada that is a close relation to a South American and Mexican cryptid who also attacks livestock, and it's the chupacabra instead of the El chupacabra. It's Canadian, you know.
Oh, I got it. Ha.
The chupacabra, eh?
Actually, I think you're mispronouncing that. It's the Echupacanuck. Yeah, that's its name. Echupacanuck, yes, indeed. An all-new kind of cryptid, my friends.
It walks around and asks very politely for permission to suck the blood out of livestock.
That's actually what you do, isn't it, Chris? You go around very... Wait a minute.
We discussed this, Micah.
Oh, well, anyway, I don't want to get the Hadles back onto you again. When we come back, we'll be delving into more strange news. And, of course, you want to stick around for the second hour of this week's program, and during which Scotty Roberts and I will be interviewing Eric Von Daniken here on the Graylian Report. I'm Micah Hanks. Stay tuned.
Some fun? Maybe get a little bit of insight. Get a lay of the land. Want to know what's really going on? Do what I do. Listen to Future Theater. It airs every Saturday, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, on the InceptionRadioNetwork.com. We'll see you there.
It takes 12 years to create a graduate. It takes about the same time to create a dropout. And at the end of the day, the difference between a child becoming one or the other could be you. So United Way is asking you to make a pledge. Tutor a child who needs help. Mentor a kid who needs someone on their side. Volunteer to read to children. Because when a child advances, we all advance. Be a reader. Tutor or mentor. Give. Advocate. Volunteer. Live United. Take the pledge now at liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Your light in the darkness. It is the Graylian Report. I'm Micah Hanks, joined in studio by co-host and producer Mr. Chris Hayes. Wrapping up another edition. Well, not an entire edition, but at least the first hour of this week's edition of the Graylian Report, because during the next hour, we're going to be talking with Eric Von Daniken, author of Chariots of the Gods. You know, he's a very interesting guy, and I'm looking very much forward to meeting him. This will have been the first time I will meet Von Daniken at Paradigm. In fact, actually, the upcoming interview will have been the first time I have ever actually spoken to Eric Von Daniken. But I'm nonetheless very much looking forward to meeting him this year at the Paradigm Symposium, during which we will be discussing a number of historical mysteries known to mankind, or rather, maybe I should say, unknown to mankind. And speaking of historical mysteries unknown to mankind, I have to say, another fantastic podcaster out there is Tim Banal. Very good, very good friend of mine. Tim and I have known each other for years. And apparently, the Season 7 Banal of America audio, the latest audio cast as of June 4th of this year, features Gerard Williams. And Gerard Williams joins Tim to discuss one of the great controversies and mysteries of World War II. He's co-author of the book Grey Wolf, The Escape of Adolf Hitler. And what they're talking about, of course, is the potential whether or not Hitler escaped to Argentina after the war and continued to live. Isn't that an interesting concept? I've always heard about that. How likely is it that Adolf Hitler may have actually escaped after the war? And there actually seems to be a bit of credible evidence for this. You know, for instance, the Russians are the ones that allegedly came across the body of Hitler there in the Fuhrer bunker, along with Eva Braun.
And we know how those communist Russians were so trustworthy.
Well, the point is that supposedly the story had been that they were concerned that Hitler, okay, if buried and it was known where he was buried, that, you know, neo-Nazis would make a shrine of the burial place of Adolf Hitler. And so it was alleged for a long time that the Russians, when they discovered the remains of Hitler and Eva Braun, carried those remains to another location. And they kept it secret for a long, long time. And for many years, intelligence services here in the United States at least claimed that they did not know not only where the remains of Hitler actually were, but whether or not Hitler could actually be with certainty stated as deceased.
Well, and one of the more popular fringe theories regarding Hitler's fate after World War II was that he, much like a lot of the high-ranking Nazi officials, were spirited away to sympathetic countries in South America like Brazil and Argentina.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's where the whole that theory built the idea for the book and the movie The Boys of Brazil.
Right, exactly. And of course, we know that, you know, Klaus Barbie, for instance, went down there. He actually worked, I believe, as a CIA informant. That's the infamous Butcher of Lyon, I should say. And then there are also the stories about, who was the other? Joseph Mengele, the infamous Angel of Death. It was believed that Mengele also went down to, as a matter of fact, I think it was actually well known that he went to Argentina following the war.
It's just Mengele. Or Mengel.
Mengel?
Or okay. Mengel.
Josef, actually, I think is also how it's pronounced, not Joseph. Josef Mengel or Mengel. Anyway. Now, another theory, and this was a little bit darker and a little deeper, involved this individual by the name of Ronald Richter, who was either a German or an Austrian physicist that Juan Perón brought down to Argentina following the Second World War to work on, get this, advanced anti-gravity and other advanced physics for use in the potential implementation of advanced aircraft. Now, of course, Joseph Farrell, who's been a guest on this program, Joseph P. Farrell, writes about this in a number of his books. One of them, the most recent, was Saucers, Swastikas, and Psyops. We interviewed him on the program discussing this, and so we know that there are indeed many instances where it was not only believed, but more or less confirmed, that there were Nazis, okay, intelligence officers, scientists, and others who had been involved with the Reich during the Second World War that were spirited away to Argentina. In fact, Argentina, and this is very interesting, toward the end of the war, Argentina almost inexplicably declares war on Germany right at the end of the conflict. What good does that do? Well, of course, after the Second World War, once the conflict was ended, this granted the Argentinians the ability to fly and land their aircraft and then potentially also spirit away Nazis out of Germany following the war. And indeed, that's probably how Ronald Richter and maybe a number of others got down there to Argentina. But there is this theory that maybe Hitler was spirited away just as well. So Gerard Williams joined Tim Banal on the Banal of America podcast to talk about that. And I thought that was interesting because this has been on people's mind quite a bit lately. The latest special issue of New Dawn magazine is featuring secret history. And they talk about everything from mind control and the New World Order to Hitler's UFOs. There's actually an article by me in this one called Agents 666 and 17F, How Occultists Won the War. It's the true story of how during the Second World War, Rudolf Hess was lured from Germany to Scotland, possibly as a result of occult trickery at the hands of none other than the infamous occultist Aleister Crowley and, yes, Ian Lancaster Fleming, the author of the famous James Bond novels. But there's also an article in this edition. I'm looking through right now, flipping through this here on the air, And there's a Nazi occult agenda article. This is really interesting stuff. And then there's, of course, this article that's titled, and this is one that was really interesting to me. I read this entire article the other night, Nazi Bases in Antarctica. 67 years after the end of the Second World War, rumors persist of Hitler's escape from Berlin, in which Hitler may not have escaped from Berlin to Argentina, but to a base in Antarctica. Isn't that interesting? Perhaps highly unlikely, but interesting nonetheless that these beliefs persist. Now, I believe it was Operation High Jump that Admiral Byrd had undertaken, where they went down there and visited Antarctica, and Admiral Byrd had often talked about the potential dangers associated, you know, the presence of a danger that threatened all humankind, and especially life as we know it in the West, that emanated from Antarctica. And a lot of people took that to mean that Byrd had gotten down there and that they had actually discovered maybe a Nazi base that was established and in use there on the South Pole. But I actually have a different theory about that. I think that Admiral Byrd's reason for visiting the South Pole to begin with probably had a lot to do with the military and the strategic advantage that a location on one of the poles would grant to one in terms of military, or at least it would be believed that this would grant a military and strategic advantage. And the reason for that would be because, of course, from the north of the South Pole, you are essentially almost equidistant from any of the major superpowers around the world, and thereby a polar base would be of great advantage to anyone who could manage to land one, for the very same reasons that, you know, if it were in case the case, well, in fact, the case that someone managed to do this, if the technology existed, and some like John Lear assert that it already does, a lunar base might be of similar advantage to any nation that could get up there and actually park themselves and procure some sort of an actual lunar base for militaristic purposes. And so I don't think that Admiral Byrd was necessarily saying that there was a danger at the South Pole at the time he visited, but I do think that he was noting that there was a potential for danger, and that indeed that kind of danger needed to be recognized in order to protect. But there, I think, have, as a result of that, persisted for years and years and years this idea that there were actually Nazi bases down there at the South Pole, and that these bases were actually in operation. And some people probably would argue that they are still in operation to this day. Chris, how likely is that to you, that if the Nazis ever actually made it to the South Pole, that there were bases and that maybe those bases are still in operation?
Likely and then unlikely.
I don't
see that it would be, you know, super unlikely for someone who, or a nation or superpower who at the time was the more technologically advanced side in the war, you know, barring our nuclear weapons program.
They were very advanced. But the thing is that they were advanced, highly advanced. The Nazis, if anything, were going through a bit of a technology explosion, but they were also very limited with their resources.
Well, I still don't think, you know, someone who's that technologically advanced, it would be that difficult for them to make their way to Antarctica initially, but having the staying power, no.
It's understood. If I understand the understandings correctly, it's already understood, and don't misunderstand me here, that they actually did make it to the South Pole. But I think that obviously the technology also existed for them to be able to utilize tunneling to create underground bases. There were many underground bases that were actually built in Germany. Very elaborate. Very, very elaborate underground rocket production facilities and things like this. So it's not beyond the realm of the possible that the Nazis could have actually done that at Antarctica, but then again, you know, the Antarctica region, the Antarctic region, not the Antarctic region. I got to point that out.
If you're Canadian, that's appropriate.
Yeah, but my stuttering may have been almost misleading at that point. The South Pole, okay. I don't know that the climate at the South Pole would have been as conducive, okay, at Antarctica for the boring of advanced and elaborate and very deep and complex tunnel systems and underground bases, the likes of which some conspiracy theorists have asserted over the years. But who knows? Who knows what might have actually been going on down there, down in the extreme depths of the real down under? And I guess it will be left to history. But if you want to find more out about that, you can also just check out this latest edition with Gerard Williams of the Banal of America podcast. It's a fantastic one. Of course, if you're listening to this podcast, you probably already listened to Ben All of America. And if you don't, I highly recommend that you check it out. Along with the sister podcast to this program, Mysterious Universe, our good friends Ben and Aaron down in Australia. And of course, stick around for the second hour of this week's edition of the Graylia Report, because next we'll be talking with Eric Von Daniken, author of Chariots of the Gods, here on the program. It is the Graylia Report. I'm Micah Hanks.
Fact. This is the Graylia Report with your host, Micah Hanks.
And welcome to the second hour of this week's edition of the Graylia Report. I'm Micah Hanks. Welcome back to the program. And I do want to say, boy, do we ever have a special show lined up for you this week. Of course, we've hinted at this already, and you know largely what's going to be going on here. In fact, we hinted at this last week, and so I want to get right to it. Earlier today, Scotty Roberts and I were joined by none other than Eric Von Daniken, author of Chariots of the Gods. I think his latest book is actually called Odyssey of the Gods. He's got another one coming out later this year. He was born in Switzerland in 1935, and his lifelong fascination with extraterrestrial visitors first found its expression in 1968 with the international bestseller Chariots of the Gods. It's well known to listeners of this audience, no doubt. His books have been translated into 28 different languages and have sold more than 63 million copies. And, of course, we're very happy to be talking with him here in just a moment. So, again, I want to thank Mr. Von Daniken for coming on board, his assistant for Raymond Zurcher, for helping us line up this interview. And, of course, always to our good friend Scotty Roberts for joining me on the Graylia Report podcast. This audio will be also featured on a subsequent podcast, the Intrepid Magazine podcast, available at the Intrepid Magazine blog. But now, without further ado, I want to jump into this conversation that Scotty Roberts and I had today, which not only features the interview with Eric Von Daniken, but you're also going to hear a bit of commentary about how this relates to, for instance, films like Prometheus, and also, of course, the relevance to culture today, and all these sorts of things that we're going to be discussing this year at the Paradigm Symposium 2012.
Man, am I ever excited this morning, Mike, and you know why.
I do know why, and I'm probably going to go ahead and spill the beans right here, but we want to get this out to folks who are listening right off the bat. This is going to be, I think I'm correct in saying this is a landmark interview that you're about to hear with none other than Eric Von Daniken, author of Chariots of the Gods, who will be joining us today for a special interview talking about Paradigm Symposium and his life and work. I'm really excited.
I got to tell you, Micah, there are people that because of the Paradigm Symposium, because of the books we're writing, because of the things we're doing, I am starting to be introduced and meet and rub shoulders with people that years ago, I never thought in my lifetime I would ever meet.
It's fun.
And
yeah.
This is exciting to me.
It is exciting. And it's kind of funny because, you know, although I've had a lot of contacts in the UFO community over the years, there are certain people who you nonetheless revere, you know, and that you kind of put on a pedestal. And with Paradigm Symposium that we're going to be doing in Minneapolis, Minnesota this October, this has been such an eye-opening and broadening experience for me, too, because, you know, in addition to the fantastic group of contacts that we already have, you know, it's really opened our world to people who come from different cultures, from different backgrounds, from different kind of philosophical viewpoints. Eric Von Daniken, of course, is probably, you know, he fits all those criteria. You know, he lives in Switzerland. He is a prolific author who's been, you know, a researcher and a hardcore investigator. And when I say that, you know, this guy travels a lot. This guy writes a lot. He is a man who has made it his life and dedicated that in existence to this sort of research. Those kind of people, you know, it's hard not to say, wow, you know, this is a giant among men. And yet again, you know, what our involvement is, you and I, Scotty, in this community today, it's bringing all those people to us, and it's fantastic to be able to share knowledge with people who have spent their lives doing what we love doing so much right now.
And, you know, the thing about Von Daniken and many people like him, but let me amend that. There are not a lot of people like him out there. But this is a man who has become an icon in this field. But imagine somebody at the age he was 45 years ago when he originally wrote the book. I think it was 47 years ago he wrote it, and it was published 3 years later in 1968. But this is a guy who really went out on a limb and did something that hadn't been done before, been talked about, I'm sure, in hushed and cloistered circles. But this is something where he went out and he says, look, this is what I'm thinking, and these are the questions I'm asking. And all he did in that book was ask about 250 different questions, I think it was. He's posing the question. And this is a guy who went out on religious limbs, theological limbs, every kind of limb you can think of to go out there. And now look where this has brought him. He's a man who's been doing this his entire life.
And to an extent, this man also put his reputation, maybe even in some instances, knowing some of the world travels he's undertaken over the years. And I hope to ask him actually how much he still travels these days during our interview. But Eric, because he's on up in his 70s, but, you know, again, he's made it his life to do this, and he's put, you know, life and reputation on the limb in pursuit of these theories. And love him or hate him, I think that there's a lot of merit to that. Scotty, I just got to say I'm so excited, and therefore our special guest this week. Of course, he'll be one of our keynote speakers at the Paradigm Symposium in October, Mr. Eric Von Daniken. Eric, how are you?
I'm wonderful. I'm sitting in Switzerland. The weather is great. I'm looking at the mountains here.
Oh, fantastic. You know, Switzerland, I have to dispel one notion about Minnesota in October. It's actually going to be very nice. That's the prime season for the fall-autumn tree color changes. And it usually is around 70 degrees to 75 degrees Fahrenheit, around 23 to 26 Celsius. So it should be awfully nice there in October.
It sounds absolutely sensational. I'm happy to be there.
It's going to be so nice. You know, Eric, something else we're very happy to hear about right now, of course, is this incredible buzz that has erupted around the new Ridley Scott film Prometheus. Apparently, you were really the man of the hour, and Ridley Scott himself has said that you directly influenced that film. What's your feeling about that? Is it great to know that you're you know, the man behind one of the biggest Hollywood films out there right now?
Well, you know, I wrote Chariots of the Gods, my first book. That was in 1965, so long, long time ago. It came out on the market only in 1968, 3 years later, and it went around the world. And of course, my book, Chariots of the Gods, influenced a lot of thinkers, a lot of space movies, a lot of science fiction movies, and I'm very, very happy to hear that I was one of the inspiration for this movie.
It's fantastic. You've been an inspiration for more than just that film, though, and for many, many decades, of course. The entire popular idea in our culture today of there being paleo contact, ancient contact between man and extraterrestrials or non-human intelligences, that can be directly attributed to you. Do you believe, Eric, that indeed these were physical beings that we had these interactions with in ancient times? Were they non-physical? What sort of actual interaction was taking place?
We have some written references which are thousands of years old. Some of them were even written before the Great Flood. Others of them were written in old Indian holy texts. And in all these texts, we had physical contact, definitely, because they have come down from the sky, these extraterrestrials, with smoke, with fire, with loud noise, with trembling. They were talking to the humans. I know this brings up a lot of other questions. Are extraterrestrials human-like, why, etc., etc. But we cannot answer this in a telephone interview.
There's a lot to get into, isn't there? Well, I'm sure folks who attend Paradigm Symposium later this year will be able to learn more about that and in depth. Of course, Scotty, I know that you're very immersed in this same line of thought. What was the nature of this contact in ancient times?
I am indeed. And Mr. Von Daniken, I want to ask you, too, the topic of the things I've written about, the Nephilim, I have gone to biblical studies, which is where my original education took place, and have found that that those biblical things are much bigger pictures than what I was taught in a very cloistered theological setting, and they tie into so many other mythologies. Did you find when you wrote your book that you had a lot of resistance on that front because it tended to challenge the way people believed?
Yes. First of all, you are perfectly right. It has a lot to do with the Bible. It has a lot to do with what we have figures in the Bible like Ezekiel, the so-called God of the Bible, etc. And after Chariots of the God, I was really attacked worldwide. There was a little booklet which was published against Chariots of the God, and the booklet had the name Crash to the Chariots.
I remember that.
Yeah. And the author was a man, his name was Wilson. And later, about 10 years later, I met Wilson in person on a TV in Australia. And I said, what kind of archaeologists are you? And he said, I'm not an archaeologist, I'm a minister. So
there you go.
So many of these attacks have come from the religious side.
And that seems to be the way it is. I think that so many people, Eric, and Scotty also, of course, Scotty, with your background in theology, I think a lot of people try to say that there cannot be a coexistence between the idea of, contact with alien realms and then, of course, the religion of man. As a matter of fact, someone on Facebook just yesterday had told me, why do you say that you believe in aliens, Micah? You know, because I think that these really dilute our perception of what God is. And if anything, they probably, these aliens, quote unquote, are really demons meant to lead us away from God. And I would argue quite to the contrary. If there is a God, would not aliens be his creation just as well?
Of course, I'm one of these figures who pray every evening. I never lost my concept, my idea, my belief in God. And it's just very easy to understand. Imagine that we are right. There were some extraterrestrial visits some thousands of years ago. Our ancestors at that time were Stone Age people. They could not understand what was going on, and they believed that these extraterrestrials were some kinds of gods. We all know that there are no gods. Now imagine the continuation. So how did these extraterrestrials came here? Who influenced them? What is their creation? Now you can go back further and say they were again influenced by another solar system, etc., etc. But by the end, you simply say in respect and in timidity with the religion, here is God, here is creation. You never lose God when you work with extraterrestrials.
Eric, I have to also real quick ask you, you say you pray every night, so you are a man of faith in addition to your belief in the extraterrestrial component.
Yes, that's true. I pray every evening. Of course, I do not pray anymore in the education that I had. I was educated strictly as a Catholic. So when I was a boy, I prayed to the Mother Mary, or I prayed to Jesus. I'm not praying to Jesus or to the Mother Mary anymore. I'm praying to some unknown and not understandable being, which we all call God.
Fascinating. That's absolutely fascinating. And it reminds me, Scotty, so many conversations that you and I have had as well with regard to who is God, what is God? And to both of you, I would say this reminds me of this question that many people assert these days, which is, what if God is an alien? You know, do you think it's really as simple and blunt as something like that?
No. God is not an alien. The aliens, again, have their creation. They have their evolution. You must go back to the beginning. What was the creation of the universe? Now, in astrophysics, we say it was a Big Bang. But who started the Big Bang and why? And only there, at the very, very beginning, you understand the bigness, the brightness of the unexplainable thing which we call God.
It's fascinating.
Oh, absolutely fascinating. And I found myself, Eric, when I was writing this book and in the years of thought put into it, I found myself praying as well, saying, God, throw me a bone. I need to find out. I need to find some answers to this, because it started challenging some of the foundations of the things I believed, making God either much bigger or much smaller than I'd originally thought him to be.
It makes it definitely much bigger. It is endless. It is fascinating. It is really fantastic. But God does exist. Without God, there would be no universe, there would be no humans, there would be no extraterrestrials.
Well, I believe that.
You know, Eric, and speaking of the God equation, your latest book, Odyssey of the Gods, The History of Extraterrestrial Contact in Ancient Greece, it looks at the potential for this ongoing extraterrestrial contact in our ancient history, having actual, parallels in our mythology. Can you tell us a little about that concept?
Well, definitely. You see, our ancestors, they have constructed gigantic temples, pyramids, and so on. Now, the question is, why have these people done this? The normal archaeological and normal answer is, they did it because of the gods. So, which gods? Now, the answer again is the gods in nature. For example, they could not understand the lightning. They could not understand the thunder. They could not understand the rising up of the moon and so on. So, they worshipped natural things, which is absolutely correct and understandable. But at that moment, where the so-called gods in antiquity start to speak, they give information. They tell some human, for example, about the calendar. Your planet Earth is revolving around the sun in 365 days, point, etc. Soon as information has come from up to down, natural explanations make no sense. Now, all these meetings, these coming together between humans and extraterrestrials have gone into mythology, definitely, because the two or three generations after the visits, our ancestors could not understand what was happening. They started to create stories not understandable for them. And now, slowly, we start to rediscover these mythologies. Some of them were true facts, including in Greek mythology.
Fascinating. Eric, do you think, how does this spill over into today, in a modern ufology? How do our perceptions of alien contact in the modern era play into this? In other words, is this sort of contact that occurred in ancient times, is it still going on today? Are we actually undergoing some variety of conditioning, maybe, by some extraterrestrial intelligence today?
Well, first I must confess, I have never seen a UFO with my own eyes.
Oh.
Sometimes I'm afraid when Eric von Däniken shows up, they rush away, they run away. But on the on the other hand, I know a lot of the UFO literature, and some of these cases are absolutely true. It happened. We know it for sure. But our scientific community doesn't care about it. They do not work with UFOs. They are afraid. They are afraid of the public, of the press, to be ridiculed. I'm sorry for my English, etc. So, but UFOs do exist. And your question is, are we observed again? Are they coming back? I suggest yes. I have this feeling. We are under observation, and we should better be prepared that one day they show up. And that's why we should also prepare a little the public, not in the sense of a religion. But every evening in my speeches, I say, ladies and gentlemen, please do not believe what I say. I don't want to create a new sect or a new religion or whatever. It's not the question of believing it, but please control it. Control the sources, control what I say, and then you come to other explanations as the explanations of yesterday.
Oh, fantastic. Now, Eric, you have a new book that's coming out this November through New Page Books, Evidence of the Gods, a Visual Tour of Alien Influence in the Ancient World. Are you just picking up where you leave off with some of your other books on this?
Yeah. You see, I have five volumes. The first one is the one we just mentioned. The second one has to do with the ancient Maya. The third one has to do with Egypt and the Mediterranean Sea, etc., etc., etc. By the end of it, five books contain 1,000 pictures and 500 pages of text. 1,000 pictures, 500 pages of text. The first volume is the one you just mentioned before. It deals only with Stone Age. I show Stone Age paintings, Stone Age pictures, Stone Age mythologies. Some of them do exist, and I compare them worldwide.
Eric, in your research, do you still travel a lot? You're known to be not only a prolific author, but a prolific traveler. Do you still hit the road and travel around the world to gather this information?
I'm absolutely crazy concerning traveling. Just a few weeks ago, I was in South Africa, and I was about 2 months ago, I was in Brazil. And the next 3 days, I go to Morocco, to Lixus, which is an archaeological place. And then I have speeches here in Germany, in Europe, in Poland, in the Czech Republic, etc. Then I go to Central America again. In October, I come to the United States. So really, I have every year at least 100,000 miles in flight.
Wow.
Oh, my. So you spend about 3 days at home, I suppose, every year.
at least half of the year, I'm running away.
You're running.
By all this, I am married since 51 year with the same wife. We still love each other.
Oh, does she ever get to go on your travels with you, or does she say, Eric, that's your thing?
Yeah, only a few, because... You know, all these kind of expeditions and to be dirty and in the hot and in the cool, I don't want to have a wife with me.
That's sure.
Men's travel, men's problems.
Well, I understand that.
Eric, I just have to say, you're a fascinating and inspiring guy, and people are so, I think, fascinated with your work and your interests and what you've offered this community over the years that they very seldom probably ask you, just about, you know, for instance, you know, personality and you know, and taste and fashion and things like that. Now, I understand that you are fond of tobacco. Is that correct?
I am what?
That you are fond of tobacco, smoking.
Oh, yes, I am. Of course. By the way, I'm in the meantime 77. And I still smoke, and of course I still drink my wine, and I'm feeling perfect. I have absolutely no problem with my age.
Young at heart.
That's good.
Well,
that's,
you know,
good.
Yes, and Scotty Roberts and I here have been known to enjoy pipe smoking, and I'll tell you what, when you come to Paradigm Symposium this year, I'll have to bring you some special American blends. Our gift to you, just in thanks of being able to spend some time with you at the Paradigm Symposium. We hope to smoke a pipe with you there.
But outside, I understand.
Yes.
Yes. I told it this morning via email, Micah, that the Minnesota has now banned all indoor smoking in public settings. So, yes, we'll be let's cross our fingers and hope for very nice weather, and we can spend our time smoking some pipes outdoors.
Otherwise, Scotty, we're going to have to go to Switzerland and visit Eric, and then we can smoke indoors.
With great pleasure. I invite you directly now. Come and see me, and come to my home and to my hotel.
Well, I tell you, we may take you up on that sometime on down the road.
Okay.
Eric, any closing thoughts? We don't want to keep you too long, and again, we're just so thankful you're able to join us today to discuss this.
Okay, my name is Eric von Däniken. I'm the author of Chariots of the Gods and 32 other books about extraterrestrials. I am happy after some 15 years to come back to the United States this fall to the symposium.
Oh, it's going to be our pleasure. Thank you again.
Fantastic.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And there it is, ladies and gentlemen. Eric von Däniken, author of Chariots of the Gods and so many more fantastic books about this unique concept, paleo contact. Scotty, that was fantastic. Probably the milestone of our mutual careers right there.
I got to tell you, I feel like I don't even know how to put an illustration on how I feel. I feel absolutely giddy.
Wait a minute.
And
you're
excited.
Starstruck. You are starstruck.
I'm not starstruck. I am. it's like this. It's like let's say you voted for a president of the United States,
okay,
and your candidate wins, and you get a chance to meet him and shake his hand. That's kind of what this felt like today. It's not starstruck. It's this is somebody that you followed their work over the years, and you never thought you'd have the opportunity to meet them, and all of a sudden, here we are talking to him, and he's so passionate about what he talks about. It wasn't there wasn't a dry moment from him. He wasn't like, well, yes, this is what I've done, 30 years ago. This is now. He's still in the midst of it. He's living it, and it made it very exciting to talk to him. Sure. I got to tell you. Maybe there's a little starstruckism in there, but not a lot.
He's a very a kind gentleman, and yes, and I'm going to bring him some fine tobacco.
He did invite us to come and visit and smoke in Switzerland with him, so we're going to have to work that one out.
I'd certainly like to. You know, it's funny, by the way, and this is technology for you. It's fascinating because I was using Skype for this interview, and it's funny, you sounded almost like you were on a telephone there during that segment of the interview. You probably didn't hear that on your end, but I guess that kind of helped distinguish between the three voices. Then again, a voice like Eric's with his
what would his brogue.
Yes, his charming accent. It would be difficult to confuse the two voices. So, but
indeed,
nonetheless, it's funny because now that you're back on the line, you sound good. You always sound good, Scotty. But
well, so do you, Micah. And hey, before we finish up, let's plug his book one more time. He has a new book in his series of Chariots of the Gods books, if you will, and you know, many years apart from each other. But this is the fifth book in the series, and it's called Evidence of the Gods, and it's coming out through Micah's and I and my publisher, New Page Books, November 22nd of this year, which is about a month after the Paradigm Symposium. So I'm sure we're going to be saying a lot about that. Oh, and as I might as well say this, Philip Coppens, author of The Ancient Alien Question, and also one of the very regular speakers on the H2 History Channel show, Ancient Aliens, wrote the foreword for Eric von Daniken's new book. And he says right here about von Daniken's book, he says, Eric boldly makes us think about what no one else dared to even speak of. He continues to challenge our understanding of history. And Phil Coppens is also releasing his new book. It's the Lost Civilization Enigma through New Page Books, coming out just, I think, a week after the Paradigm Symposium. So we're going to have a little bit of a launch party for him at the Paradigm Symposium as well. And I may not have told you that, Mike, and that was a conversation I had with Philip the other day.
Oh, really?
So now you know of it. But look at the people that are passionate about what they do and that are going to be here with us at the Paradigm Symposium, and anybody who wants can come and see this thing.
Yeah,
this is amazing to me. And you know, I think people mistake our excitement sometimes, at least in print when we put it out there on the social networks and things, that we're just advertising so we can sell tickets. Well, hell yeah, of course we want to sell tickets. That's the way we're going to pay our bills with this thing. But we are excited about this. We hope that our passion for these topics carries over and transcends the fact that we have to do a little bit of marketing and we have to do a little bit of advertising. But this event is going to be so amazing that we ourselves, Micah and I, sit back here. And Micah, you can confirm or deny this. There are times we sit back and we slap our foreheads and say, oh my God, look at the people who said yes, they're going to come to this thing, and look at what's going to happen here in October. And it flummoxes me some days.
We've been involved in planning a lot of events, and obviously Paradigm Symposium is the largest event that either of us have, the first that you and I've done together, and probably the largest of any that that we've done mutually, or rather, I guess, you know, on our own over the years. But the thing about Paradigm Symposium and the reason for the magnitude of this event, this is all intentional. You know, I mean, we'd begun,
yeah.
Again, you've done, you know, been involved in a lot of conferences over the years, and I used to work a good bit with Joshua Warren with his paranormal conferences that he did as well. But with Paradigm Symposium, when we came into it, and we joked around first about, you know, having a 2012 end of the world party. I'd even joked with George Norrie months ago. I'd said, you know, George, I'm going to have an end of the world party. You want to come on out? And he said, well, I'll join you. But he says, I don't think the world's going to end. And I think that, you know, really what we're going through is a paradigm shift, you know, and I think that people are going to really be waking up and you know, coming into a new way of thinking. And when you and I began seriously talking about putting together a large event, and actually, you know, getting people like George and Eric involved in this, Giorgio Tsoukalos as well, and of course our good friend that you just mentioned, Philip Coppens, you know, bringing these people to this, to borrow George's words, you know, would offer an event where it would not only be enlightening and educational, but it would offer a new mode of thinking, you know, a paradigm shift, if you will. And I think that there's no finer title that could have been given to this event than Paradigm Symposium. And that all along has been our intended goal, is to put together not just a conference, you know, where people show up, you know, and they dress up and they do this or that. This is an event that is intended to be educational. And that, yes, despite the fact that there's a lot of work that goes into it, you know, you and I are just as excited about the speakers that we have and, of course, the other circumstances involving and that will culminate to form the Paradigm Symposium 2012. It's going to be a great event. And personally, even if it weren't something you and I were, you know, orchestrating, I would still want to attend. I'm sure of that.
Oh, same here. And this is going to be amazing. And frankly, we could probably even leak it now. There might be ways for people who can't make it physically to the event to view this thing live. And we'll just throw that hint out there. So if you want to see this event and just can't make it here, There might be ways to watch it on your computer. So let's leave it at that for now.
Absolutely. And of course, if you want to find out more information, you can always visit www.paradigmsymposium.com. You can buy your tickets there. We're offering discounts for active military and, of course, also group rates and things like that. And people can learn all about any new updates and additions that are coming along as the weeks continue leading. I mean, we're still just a little under 4 months out right now, but well, actually right at 4 months. But, you know, October will be here right before we know it. And that's that, too, is exhilarating. So can't wait, Scotty.
Indeed. Now, Micah, you've got your new book has been finished. Tell us a little bit about what your book is about. It's being published through New Page Books. It's called The UFO Singularity. If there is a subtitle, I don't know it. Tell us just a little bit about that book before we're done here today.
Well, you know, it's funny because when you're writing a book for a big publisher, you have control over certain aspects of the book. And I mean this in a good way. My publishers and my editors, specifically Michael Pye, who was just so good in terms of working with authors, the original proposal that I pitched I thought was pretty good. I thought it would be the best UFO-oriented material I'd ever produced at that point. And Michael took the idea, trimmed it down, and said, why don't you focus just on this aspect of the enigma, which would be how future technology influences or may hold some sort of a connection to what we perceive as UFO phenomenon. Why don't you do that and let's make it a shorter manuscript? And I thought both of those were good ideas for two reasons. A, because it's a little more focused, and B, a shorter manuscript these days, I think, is good. I know a lot of people actually have read my last book, Magic, Mysticism, and the Molecule, and they've said, you know, we could deal with a longer book from you. But in this day and age, people are so busy. And I literally think that the way, this actually is something I get into in the book a little bit, the way that internet culture, or sometimes what I call snack-sized or soundbite culture, the way it's changing the way that we operate and the way that we get our news and the way that we perceive things going on in our world, people want quick information, and they want it in short, digestible bites. And so it's not like a pamphlet. It's a book, but you know, it's also not going to be a 300 word book. You know, like for instance, Ray Kurzweil's the UFO Singularity. His book, The Singularity Is Near. It's a very long book. It's chock full of information and empirical data that Kurzweil gives to you know, substantiate this idea that a technological singularity may occur sometime within the next few decades. And what he's referring to in terms of technological singularity is the advent of smarter than human intelligence. We largely view that this will be artificial intelligence, but I think that with UFO technology, what we see is, at very least, a form of technology, whether terrestrial or extraterrestrial, as Eric had been supposing there a few minutes ago, or maybe even, you know, something that is interdimensional. We don't know exactly what the nature of the UFO enigma is, but it is a form of technology that appears to be beyond what we understand, at least according to, you know, mainstream knowledge here on Earth. There's something going on here, which has led a lot of people to think that there's something alien or extraterrestrial. I have supposed that maybe it's that, or maybe it's even something, some technology that emanates from our future, or maybe a complex union between the two of those. But that's what the UFO Singularity will deal with, and I'm thankful that the publishers worked with me to bring this to the table in a very concise and very focused way. I think it's going to be something that people will, if nothing else, you may not agree with it, but you know, I think that you'll come back with a slightly different perspective of UFOs. And like Philip's book, that one will be coming out, just after the Paradigm Symposium.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, now, is your book for a fall release? Is yours also in November?
I think mine's going to be, if not mid to late November, early December. So, you know, hey, if nothing else, it'll be a stocking stuffer, right?
Fantastic. Well, I'm looking forward to it. I read many parts of it. I didn't consume it yet. I just saw it in its raw form from you, and I'm excited to see this book out.
Well, thank you for that, Scotty. And, of course, your new book, of course, The Reptilian Enigma.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, no, hold on. You couldn't call it The Reptilian Enigma. What is the title?
No, I actually, the original title was The Reptilian Enigma.
Right.
And because of Phil Coppin's book, through the same publisher, we both have Michael Pye as an editor, just like you do, and the publishing company, New Page Books. His new book is The Lost Civilization Enigma. And when I came back with the Reptilian Enigma, Michael said, you know, well, look, we maybe don't want to use that title that way because it might give the impression this is a series of books on the same topic. And so we shifted the title to The Secret History of the Reptilians. And it's subtitled The Pervasive Presence of the Serpent Throughout Human History, Religion, and Alien Mythos. And my book is due to New Page Books in completion in about a month. And so I'm on the crash and burn last 30 days of this book.
Oh, wow.
And mine's due to release February 22nd in 2013, so next year.
And so you're going to be busy for the next month.
The next month is going to find me very unfindable.
Yeah, I've said it many times before, and this is all I've got to say. Snakes. Why did it have to be snakes? So we'll certainly look forward to hearing more about that book and many other fascinating and intriguing developments that will be coming together in the next few months. Of course, Scotty Roberts, thank you for joining us on this week's edition, a very special edition of the Graylian Report podcast. I'm Micah Hanks, my friends, and, well, of course, you always know where to begin looking if you want the latest on the weird and the unusual. You can always find it here. While you're online, by the way, check us out, www.graylianreport.com, for internews, podcasts, and articles throughout the week. On behalf of all of us here, I'm Micah Hanks. My friends, I bid you adieu, and in the meantime, stay strange. We'll talk to you soon. We'll